You are listening to Gangland Wire, hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins.
Welcome, all you wiretappers out there. Welcome to the studio of Gangland Wire. This is going to be another one of my little short bonus episodes. Now, as you know, this podcast runs on donations and purchases of my books, movie, and the Kansas City Mob Tour app. I have over 200 free episodes out there with interviews of ex-mobsters, cops, federal agents, mostly about the mob across the United States. We did a first-person interview with a parachuting hijacker, an interview inside the prison with a bank-robbing boonie hat bandit, did interviews with the investigators of a couple of serial killers here in Kansas City. It's been a lot of fun, and I don't burden you with any ads if you notice. I want to thank Ben Ellickson for a whole lot of help in many different ways. I also want to thank Mark Ryan, Barry Parks, Rich Sullivan, and Ron Jones. I mentioned this in the last bonus episode. I have added an easy way to support the show. I got a Venmo account. If you have Venmo, just send a dollar or two to Gangland Wire. It's kind of like buying me a cup of coffee, a Starbucks coffee. Remember my story about the Starbucks kind of gal? Well, I'm a Starbucks kind of guy, but you can buy me a McDonald's senior coffee if you want. That's only about a buck or maybe even less. So I ask that you do that or go to my Gangland Wire website, click on the shop page. There you can donate with a credit card. You can buy my movie, you can buy my book, or you can go to the iTunes store and buy the Kansas City Mob Tour app, get a little bit off of that. And you can also help for free by liking and sharing my Gangland Wire Facebook page, my Twitter feed, or the Instagram page. So now that you've had to listen to that advertisement, now on to this bonus episode. As you regular fans know, we love the city of Chicago down here in Kansas City. They're kind of our organized crime big brother. We had our own crime family. We had our own crime boss, but he really took into consideration what Chicago wanted, what Chicago needed, and he worked very closely with the Chicago outfit. Well, Chicago, the city of Chicago, is well known for its corruption. And you guys like Ben that live up there, I think Rich Sullivan maybe lives up there, you know about Chicago, the city, and corruption. I once had an aunt that moved up there from Kansas City. I asked her about getting her driver's license changed, how much trouble that was, and if she had to take the test over again. She said, oh, it wasn't any trouble. We had a guy in the office that just told me how to do it. I just had to go kick a little money to the right guy, and all of a sudden I had a new driver's license. They love kickbacks on snow removal contracts, hauling contracts. They love having ghost employees. Chicago is corrupt. That's how you keep these big political organizations in power, like the Daley organization, for years and years and years. We had the same thing in Kansas City. We're not squeaky clean down here. The Pendergast organization, many, many no-show jobs, many sweetheart contracts to mob-connected providers of services. Now, in Chicago, the corruption can be found rooted mainly in the famous or infamous First Ward. It was ran for years by outfit-connected ward boss Pat Marcy. If you listen to my show with Mike Byrne on the outfit hitman Harry Aleman, you may remember, or if you haven't, go back and listen to it. There's like a four-part episode. I went into Harry Aleman at great depth. You'll remember that the fixer lawyer in that show, Robert Cooley, would eventually testify that the First Ward boss, Pat Marcy, was intricately involved in the payoff of Judge Frank Wilson to ensure that Harry Aleman was found not guilty for the murder of Billy Logan. I was looking at the Facebook page, the Chicago Outfit, old and current news and articles by our friend Mike Byrne, who we've had on the show a few times. This is a great Facebook page for anybody interested in the Chicago Outfit. I found a story about Chicago corruption. It seems that back in 1991, there was an inspector general of the city of Chicago, or an inspector general's office, and the man's name was Alexander Vursteris. I'm not sure how to pronounce that exactly, but that's the best I can come up with. He conducted an investigation into the Department of Streets and Sanitation In his first investigation, he found 37 employees were on the payroll, but he could find no evidence that they ever reported to work. Sounds like something out of The Sopranos, all those guys sitting around a construction site, sunning themselves, getting paid but not working. Now, all 37 of these men, employees, ghost employees, if you will, were from the First Ward, of course. He took this information to the Daley administration. Then the Daley administration, after negotiating with the politically powerful Laborers International Union, they fired a handful of these guys and suspended the majority. I guess when they got done with their suspension, they came back to work. Wonder where they came back to work to since they weren't showing up anyhow. The city inspector general was not done yet. By 1993, he had uncovered an outfit-connected piece of corruption. A First Ward resident named Chris Christie the Nose Spina was a foreman assigned to Streets and Sanitation Scrap Metal Yard. The inspector general learned that Spina had used city crews to periodically clean up all the scrap metal in the scrap metal yard and sell it to a private scrap yard. In one deal, they were able to document that he made over $6,000 just for himself. He probably had to kick a little bit to his employees, but I bet he kept the majority of that. He probably had to kick a little bit to Pat Marcy or whoever it was to help him get that job. That's how it works. Now, when that was exposed, the city took some real stern action. They transferred him to the Bureau of Signs and Markings. It's probably an even easier job. Maybe not so easy to get some graft going there, some corruption. I don't know. But while he was there, he was kind of a no-show guy. The city paid him $41,000 a year plus overtime. During the time he had this job, the FBI reported that they often observed Christie the Nose, or Chris Spino, driving outfit capo Joy the Clown, Joy Lombardo. They saw him, they observed him being driven to meetings with other outfit members. He was a perfect driver because he was an outfit guy, but he had no criminal record. The city inspector found that the city was paying Spina during all this time, and they even found out that he was putting in for overtime once in a while, when Joy had a late meeting, I guess. And it's not over with yet. During this same investigation, they found that Spina supervised his two brothers at the, I assume, at the Bureau of Signs and Markings, John and Anthony Spina. And they ended up being arrested for weapon charges during the city internal investigation. The city promised that they were going to fire them if they got found guilty. Do you think they fired them? I think not. I bet they're still working up there. They were younger brothers. Either that or they're drawing their retirement. This was during a time when Joy Lombardo had been released from his last prison sentence before the family secrets charges and case came out. And if you remember, he took out an ad in the Chicago Tribune, and here's some of what it said. "I am not a made member of the Chicago mob, and if anybody hears my name in connection with any criminal activity, please notify the FBI, local police, and my parole officer, Ron Kumpke." Now, ain't that something? That guy was a piece of work. You got to admire Lombardo for his boldness and chutzpah, I mean, and the outfit, too. He kind of had to be, I would think he would have had that approved. I wouldn't know if Iupa would really like that particularly. Iupa was like Savella, and Accardo was like Savella. I believe he was still alive then. They did not like somebody coming to the attention of anybody. Now, when the Lombardo chauffeuring incident was exposed, you'd think that Mr. Spina's city career was over. Then the city did fire him, but he appealed. He went to court, and a Cook County judge ordered the city return him to work, probably with back pay, more than likely. He probably ended up, again, I bet he'd be retired by now. Best I can tell, he's still alive. I bet he's drawing his city pension today. During all this time, they learned that Spina was part owner of the Springy Trucking Company, and they had received thousands and thousands of dollars in city contracts out of a program called the Hire Truck Program. I guess they were hiring rather than hauling stuff around, whatever they needed hauled, with their own city trucks and their own city employees. They would hire contractors that had trucks to hire things, which is rife with corruption for sure, kickbacks and sweetheart deals and paying too much money to do it. I think I have to look into this whole snow removal thing. There was a big scandal on snow removal up there too. Some of you guys that have lived in Chicago for years can tell me about that. So as far as I know, like I said before, I think Chris Christie the Nose is still out there. I couldn't find an obit on him, aging gracefully, drawing his city pension. Probably got city health care. Well, by now he would have Medicare. If anybody has an update on Chris Christie the Nose Spina, do an update, make a comment on this blog page on my website, or make a comment on my Facebook page, Gangland Wire. So that ends my short bonus episode about Chris Christie the Nose, Spina, Joey Lombardo, and corruption in the city of Chicago. If you have a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. And I want to thank Mike Byrne and his Facebook page, The Chicago Outfit, Old and Current News and Articles. It's a great Facebook page for anybody interested in the outfit. You know, the Chicago Tribune, they covered the outfit like crazy. You could take any series of articles and write a decent book. And then go to another one. I bet you could get 20 bucks out of those Chicago Tribune articles. They really went into it in depth. He's gone back. He was just doing the 70s and 80s, and he's slipping on back into the 50s and 60s, where when some of these guys in the 70s and 80s, Lombardo and them, were really young. Frank Sweese, I just read one about Frank Sweese, or I just did one about Frank Sweese. That was back in 1962 in that last bonus episode, if you remember, in the truck hijacking situation. So one last time, buy me a cup of coffee through Venmo at Gangland Wire, or go to my website, www.ganglandwire.com. Go to the shop page, and you can donate with your credit card or PayPal account, or buy my book, Leaving Vegas, How FBI Wiretaps Ended Mob Domination of Las Vegas Casinos. Get the Kindle version, I suggest, because in that, I link the actual audio from those wiretaps to text in the book. So thank you, and good night, all you wiretappers.
Music provided by our good friend and superfan from Portland, Oregon, Casey McBride. Thanks, Casey.